30 years ago, Marita Conlon McKenna's groundbreaking children's novel Under the Hawthorn Tree was published. The novel, set in famine-era Ireland, focuses on three children who journey across Ireland to find their two great aunts, having lost both their parents to the great hunger that ravaged Ireland at that time. The book became an enormous bestseller and a defining read for children and adults in the years that followed. Marita Conlon McKenna joins us now to look back at the book and 30 years of people reading it and countries reading it and translations of it and huge success, all of which is the more extraordinary, Marita, because when you wrote this first, you had no intention of publishing it. It was just a story for your kids.
No, I never intended publishing it. The story grew in my head and I wrote it very quickly. I wrote it in 12 weeks for my daughter. My daughter loved it and I really was very content it was for her and for my other children and later for my grandchildren and hopefully great-grandchildren. So I never had intended publishing it, but only that I was doing a course in children's literature at the time and I mentioned to my tutor that I was actually writing. I said, I'd love to have a look at it. And, of course, I gave her the thing to read. And she said to me, oh, my God, you've got to send it to a publisher. And then another friend had an older child, an older daughter, and she read it. And she kept, just, you know, a pad of paper, you know. And she kept saying, oh, it's the best book I ever read. My friend kept saying, you know, she's convinced it's an actual proper book. It's not just pieces of paper you gave her to read. So then I did send it to a publisher, and I was very lucky. But it didn't start off. It was really for my daughter and for children, my own children, to read, and never guess other children would be reading it.
But the bravery of some of the things that you did in the midst of that, you know, I often wonder, you know, if you were an established writer, would you have taken the risk of having a baby?
No,
you know, and buried in the first couple of chapters.
You're very right. I would not have dared to write it if it wasn't being written for my own daughter, because I would have thought, well, nobody in their right mind is going to publish a book where a baby dies literally within the first page of the book, or that the children find a body of the things that happen in the book. But I didn't have that constraint because I wasn't thinking of what a publisher would say. I wasn't thinking what adults would say. I wasn't thinking what the media would say. I wasn't thinking any of that. I was just thinking of my own child. I wanted her to learn about the famine. I wanted her to read a good, strong story with really incredible, her heroes in it, three little Irish heroes, because I hadn't found an Irish book that had real such heroes in it. And I wanted to create heroes for my daughter to read that were Irish like her and grew up in Ireland. So, I would have been terrified to touch it. And the fact I'm not a historian, not an academic as well, I would have been terrified. So I would never have done it, only that I wrote it just for a different reason.
Which begs the question, how do you get rid of that voice in your head now that says, you can't do that, the publisher won't publish it, the readers won't read it?
I still write all these books. People say no one will, even my second book, Wildflower Girl, the follow-up, because I said to my publisher, I want to write a book about a skivvy, a little girl who's a skivvy in America, a little maid in a house. And he said, God, no one will read that book. And then I did a book about a traveller girl, Katie, and the Blue Horse. And I don't know, I always... kind of a lot of my work, I suppose, is driven by injustice and what I see as injustice, which, children see injustice very clearly. And so I've kind of always taken a tack of writing things that aren't the obvious thing to write about. And that's what I've done. And in a way, in my career, I've kept that going right through. So I kind of like that kind of writing. I don't know why I'm driven to it. I must be mad. But I do like to have a subject I care about and drives me to write the book. And if it's published afterwards, it's brilliant, but I probably would have written that book anyway. It's not not driven by the need to publish the book.
The reaction to the book, I mean, and I'm wondering, when you were writing it, were you even thinking about, well, the story I was told about the famine at school, I'd like to tell a different story from the one I was told in my history books. Was there something missing in that story, as told to you in your school days?
I wasn't told very much, Sean, in fairness now. And I even studied history in my Leaving Cert, and I was told very, very little. And I wasn't really told the humanity of it. We were told the numbers, but I wasn't told the humanity of it. And I wasn't... when you're writing for children, it's the actual, not the big picture. you know, what's the politics of it in London and Dublin, that doesn't come into it because you're a child, you don't know that. So, but it's the actual what's happening on the ground in your area. It's all local about, you know, the workhouse, what's happening, people being evicted, you know. So I really wanted to keep it very much from a child's point of view, the story. And I felt that just even like studying the history growing up, I didn't really feel it moved you the way it should move you or make you feel, you know, that you really, really wanted to find out more about it. It just, the way it was taught, it just wasn't right. And I that's one good thing. It has really changed now, the way children find out about the famine and are taught the famine. And now they're actually exploring all kinds of avenues and looking at, you know, in their own area, what happened in their own area in the famine. So it's totally changed in 30 years, absolutely totally changed.
And what about in other countries, and I suppose I'm particularly thinking about the United Kingdom and in Britain, when the book was published there, I remember speaking to Freddie Fox, one of the actors who was in the film Black 47.
Yeah.
And he said, we knew nothing about the famine. We never heard this story or anything about it at all in our history books.
Yeah, well, the book actually, Penguin UK, Puffin, or Viking and Puffin, they published the book in England and it sold quite well. But I think the first print run they did, I did hear afterwards, I had won a big book award in America called the International Reading Association, but it's actually called the IRA for short. When they printed the book, this is true, the first run of the hardback for Viking or for Penguin, they had printed winner of the IRA on it, winner of the IRA prize on it. And that, I think that had to be pulled, that actual first run, because they said there's no way anyone in England will buy a book with winner of the IRA award on it.
I don't know
what happened, but it has come out there. And Wildflower Girl, actually, the second book, they would use that more in England than they would the first book, because they read about the Victorians and Peggy working as a maid in a big house, even though it's in America. They would that's I think, you know, a lot of schools use that in England. But the famine, I mean, I always do get letters from schools in England and from kids in England that have managed to get it and read it and are enjoying it. But I don't think it's going to ever be top of the best selling list in England at the moment anyway.
Are there specific, actually let me play something for you, because there was a 1998 television version of the book made, I think it was for Channel 4 television at the time,
yeah.
a movie for television. I want to listen to a clip from that particular TV adaptation. The three children have arrived at a square where there's a protest taking place against a shipment of grain to England.
Is this where the aunties live?
No, Peggy, but it can't be far now.
Can't we rest here?
Yeah, come on.
Grain gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are ye blind? Can you not see all the starving people around you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Disperse! Let there be no trouble. These goods are sold and paid for.
Yeah.
That grain was grown in Irish soil. It's been sent to feed English bellies while our people starve!
Yeah.
Yeah. Let there be no trouble!
We're Irish men.
Yeah.
We'll not stand for it!
Yeah.
And there we heard Oisín Burke was the young man at the riot there, Roy Doran, a British soldier, and the three children, Leanne Murphy, Chris Bollard and Darren Lawl, are playing the characters of Eily, Michael and Peggy O'Driscoll, which you will know as the characters of the three children from Under the Hawthorn Tree, celebrating 30 years this year. Marita Conlon McKenna with me speaking about it this evening. I play that clip because I wondered, particularly that very political aspect, were there other countries, you know, you said that some children in England wrote back to you, schools in England wrote back to you when they read the book, Marita. Were there other countries where perhaps that political aspect of famine, because the book has been translated from many places, where that was picked up on more, or where you got responses to it that, you know, looked at that aspect of famine, which is so often not climatological at all?
The book is in so many languages around the world, John. It's just incredible. But I'm very proud that it went into some even African dialects for children who were in refugee camps that were being fed. And the books, there wasn't any book for them to read that mirrored what their experience was when they were learning to read. So my publishers were asked years ago to, would we let Under the Hawthorn Tree be translated in a few of these different dialects and things like that. So it has been. So it's used, and children around the world, I get letters from all over the place, and they understand it, they get it, and they actually really care about the kids, and they know what's happened. And some of those countries, you know, they may have had, you know, famine since Ireland had the famine. You know, they've had latter famines, you know, and latter things like that. So their countries know that, and it's part of their history, and the book, you know, encapsulates what happens sometimes in their country too, you know. So in Japan and places like that, and you know, it's just incredible how kids around the world just read it and they get the story, even though it is dark. But that scene about exporting the grain, I thought was a very, you know, for my daughter, it was really for her to understand that, you know, it wasn't that all the crops had failed, you know, it was the potato had failed, and that there was still food, but they couldn't get their hands on food because they were poor.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very moving even to hear you talking about the fact that it would have gone into those refugee camps. I mean, it's and wonderful to think that it might have given some place of connection for people and emigrants who find themselves in a similar situation now. That 1998 film, I heard you talking recently, well, it was a while back actually, I think the interview was from maybe 2013, there was a musical version in Canada. Was there some talk that there might be another film version done, maybe going into a bigger scale?
Yeah, well, that hasn't happened, but we are hoping. But there has been another actual stage production done by Cahoots, who are a fantastic theatre company in the north of Ireland, in Belfast based, and it's been adapted by Charles Way, who's adapted a lot of children's classic books for the stage. He's English, and he adapted it, and I saw some of his work, you know, in Belfast, and I just was blown away. So I agreed that they would adapt it, and they had it on in Belfast. It's done really well in the Mac, and it actually came back there, and it was in the Mac there only in January, and then it went all around Ireland to, you know, the Wexford Opera House, Cork Opera House, and it was packed out, and, you know, everyone wanted to stay on longer, but it actually ended the day literally the first person unfortunately died here of COVID in Dublin in the end of February, the 29th of February. So, but they were very lucky to have the tour done. But there are plans with Cahoots to bring it further afield. So I think later on next year, hopefully it might come back in Ireland. But they're planning to go to the US and maybe go to China and a few other places. So I don't know. But whether that will happen now with the way the world is going, I don't know. But it's a really fantastic because they blended Irish music and dance and capture the spirit of the book really well. So I was very, very pleased with it. A very good production.
One final question, Marita. You 30 years since Under the Hawthorn Tree, and you addressed famine then, possibly in a way it hadn't been addressed in Irish literature for children or adults beforehand. Since that, then, more recently, you approached the theme again in The Hungry Road, but this was a book aimed more at adults. Was there something that you felt you had to say that was more for an adult readership than you could say in Under the Hawthorn Tree?
Yeah, well, The Hungry Road is a very different book, and I make quite clear it's not a children's book, and I wouldn't want a child to read it. They'd have to be at least a teenager because it's very, very graphic, and it really is. It's set in Skibbereen, and a lot of it is through the diary of the doctor there, Dr. Dan Donovan, who's doing autopsies on bodies and, people coming into him, and he's also the medical officer for the workhouse. So the things he's seeing and the things that have been witnessed in Skibbereen at the time were horrific, but I felt no one had really written the story in a way that satisfied me as a writer. So I didn't even know if it would work as a book, me trying to do it and going through the priest and going through the doctor and this one of the tenants, Mary Sullivan. But actually, you know, the more I wrote it, the more I realised I thought I could pull it together, and I did pull it together, and the reaction to the book has been amazing. It's just been really incredible. And it came out the beginning of January. Talk about good timing. And my publishers are going to pick publishers originally in March, and then they changed it to January. And I thought, March is a much better time to come out. It came out in January. But it's very strong, and it's all based on truth as well of what happened down in West Cork, which was the epicentre of the famine.
Well, listen, many congratulations on reaching that 30th anniversary.
Thank you, Sean, you're so good to have me on. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And
not
thank
at all.
You, thank you to all my readers who have been reading books for 30 years.
And hopefully we'll celebrate the 40th, 50th and onwards.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
No, OK. Marita Conlon McKenna there speaking to us about Under the Hawthorn Tree, 30 years old this year, still in print, published by O'Brien Press, as are the two sequels. It was part of a trilogy, in fact, subsequently The Wildflower Girl and Fields of Home completed that trilogy. And Marita's latest novel, The Hungry Road, is published by Transworld Ireland. By the way, a reminder, or I should let you know that Donald Teskey, who actually illustrated Under the Hawthorn Tree, he will be the subject of this week's The Works Presents. He'll be speaking to John Kelly tonight, and that show will be broadcast Thursday evening at 11:10 on RTE1 television.